Lecture 7, Owerri, Nigeria. The topic is Techniques for Using Values and Love to Better My Life. Techniques for Using Values and Love to Better My Life. Now, on page 43 of the songbook here are these words here. I am the light, I am the light, I am the light, I am the light. And the world is truly illumined, for the world is what I am. And it goes something like this. I am the light, I am the light, I am the light, I am the light. And my world is truly illumined, for my world is what I am. I am the light, I am the light, I am the light, I am the light. And my world is truly illumined, for my world is what I am. I am the light, I am the light, I am the light, I am the light. And my light is truly illumined, for my world is what I am. Once again together. I am the light, I am the light, I am the light, I am the light. And my world is truly illumined, for my world is what I am. Every one of us is a light. We are a light that cannot always be seen, but we are a light that is powerful as anything can be. The nurses in the New York hospitals were learning how to use their hands to bless the patients, not heal them, but to bless them, to let the patients know that the nurses cared about them. So the nurse would take their hand and put it on their forehead, not to take their temperature, and put it on their shoulder or put it on their hand, just to show somebody cared. Somebody cared. And whenever the nurses did this, the incident of improvement in the patient was remarkable, just remarkable. The reason is, we are a world of caring people. We are a world of caring experiences. And we want to learn how to utilize our caringness as much as possible and as beautifully as possible. We are the light. We are the light. We are the power of the universe. And when we take this power that we are, this light, and we shine this out, we shine this out upon all the people that we are, all the world that we are, all the places that we are. We, I don't want to use the word healing, but we are a healing light. We are a light that changes the attitude of the people that we're dealing with. Whether it's a person who's sick, a person who's lost someone, a person who's poor, a person who's got any problem at all. When we can go there and be the light for them, and shine our light upon them, we sort of illumine them in a beautiful, dynamic way. Now, there are many techniques that we have to gain this power, not gain the power, but to direct the power. Because we do have the power. We do have the power. Now, Endless is a good example of this. Endless doesn't know how good he is. Endless goes around, and whenever a baby is crying, he picks up the baby and they stop crying. They're scared to death of him. Yeah? No?
No.
No! What happens?
He loves them.
They love him? But they just saw him for the first time. How can they love him if they just saw him for the first time? How can he go into a bus and see a woman sitting there with a baby in her arms, crying its head off? And he said, may I hold your child? And the woman says, thank God, and gives the child to him. He looks like a good guy. And so he takes the child in his arm. Instantly, the child is quiet. Instantly, the child has a big smile on his face. Not only quiet, but a big smile on his face. Now, what's he doing? Is he giving the child some special energy? Or is he giving the child his love?
His love.
His unconditional love. And he doesn't care what the problem is of the baby. He's not concerned whether the baby's got wet diapers or whether the baby has anything else. He's not concerned about that. All he's concerned about is that he loves the baby, shares his love with the baby, and the baby's love comes through. Now, that's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. Now, where are you all about? Now, we have a very wonderful group here, a very beautiful people, and all of you are extremely brilliant, you're extremely light conscious. All of you have spoken your word or laid your hands on someone when they were not feeling well or something, and they said, "Oh, thank you. That was so lovely of you." Now, you didn't expect that you were going to heal them or that you were going to make some change in their world. You merely felt that you were sharing with them your love. Love and light are the same thing. How do they define love? Usually as some big glowing arc, you know, like the big heart, you know, with radiant lights going off from it. And that's love. Now, we have all of that within us. Each one of us is that love. Each one of us is that radiant light of love. And we shine out to everyone and everywhere we go. We shine that love out, and we are that love. Now, are you ready to be a light of love? Now, you see, Endless has done this most of his life. And he hasn't known why or how he had this gift, but he knew that every time he would touch a baby that was crying, the baby would stop crying. Now, did he help the baby? Did he help the baby with its illness? Did he help the baby with its problems? Or the wet diaper, bad diaper? Did he help the baby? No. He merely loved the child. And the child no longer felt the external power of the problem. Now, all of us have had conditions from time to time where we have a cold, or we have a headache, or we have some problem with our body. And what is happening to us is our nervous system is detecting this problem and reporting it to our brain, and our brain is sending out signals of how to work with it, how to cancel it, or how to relieve it, or how to handle it. Now, if you say to yourself, "I am peace, I am peace," just deep breath, "I am peace," let it all out, say, "I am peace, I am peace." Do that 10 times. It's not hyperventilation. What you're doing is you're giving your nerve endings in your brain a different picture than they had before. Before, they had a picture of being nervous, of being uptight, of being unhappy, and now you're forcing a new picture on them by relaxing, by letting the air out. And then, when you check, all of the areas that hurt before no longer hurt. It's the better painkiller than anything in the world. But it's not used. It's not used because it takes a dedication to do that. You have to determine you're going to walk on fire when you go to take the course in walking on fire. You have to determine that you want to walk on fire. You want to walk across those hot coals. You want to do that. Now, you're crazy, of course. But you want to do that. So now, how do you go about doing it? How do you go about walking on fire? Well, the first thing the instructor does is said, "I want you all to know this. When you walk over those coals tonight, you are not going to walk on fire. I do not teach people to walk on fire." Now, that blows your mind in the first place, because you came there and you paid for learning how to walk on fire. So then the person talks to you and says, "Now let's get it straight. You're going to walk on cool, wet moss. I'm going to lay a ribbon of cool, wet moss out here, and you're going to walk on that. Now how does that feel on your feet?" "Fine. No problem." Cool, wet moss. He could have said a normal carpet. He could have said feathers. He could have said anything. But he said cool, wet moss. Cool, meaning not hot. And wet, meaning comfortable, you know, and moss, meaning something you can conceive of as a soft surface. Okay, now, he says, I want you to walk on this mentally. Walk across that cool, wet moss. And he has he has you do this 3 or 4 times, maybe more. Depends upon your reluctance. And he has you mentally walk across that as many times as you can. And pretty soon, the day is over. It's evening. You don't realize it, but it goes so quick because you're practicing this and you're thinking cool, wet moss, and you're thinking it. Then he's got this glowing fire going out there. And he said, all right, you're first. He doesn't give you a chance. You're all standing there. He says, you're first. Now go ahead. So you walk across the cool, wet moss. And you walk across the cool, wet moss. He said, this is nice, cool, wet moss. It feels just like wonderful, cool, wet moss. And you walk to the other end. And then you say, I love walking on cool. And you walk back again. You don't have to. One way, one time is enough. But you walk back, and hey, I'm good. You know. And then you walk the other way. And then he said, I can walk on fire. And he burns his feet. Because he changed his attitude about what he was walking on in an instant. And if he is strong enough, and he might be, he could in an instant change his attitude back to walking on cool moss. He could change it back. More difficult because he's felt the heat and his brain has received all those receptors telling that there's heat down there. Heat, hot, hot, hot heat, you know. We have the ability in our brain to receive the receptors of all of our nervous system throughout our body from all sorts of nerve endings, from whatever it is we got out there. And that is reported to the brain. But if the brain can be diverted in its thinking to call something different than what it is, you can do it. Now, we're not going to practice this today, but you can think about it. You can say, I know how to walk without any ground underneath me. I know how to walk in the air. I can walk in the air. I can walk in the air. Because the air is solid. If you've read Illusions by Richard Bach, he talks about walking on the water and jumping into the pond and the dirt and getting all dirty. Well, it's the same type of thing. Now, you may or may not want to try it, but the thing is, it's all mental. It's all the mind. And if your mind is so receptive to all these possibilities, you can instantly do it. Now, you travel from here to there without going there many times. I say to you, where's your mother? You say, well, she's home. Well, what's she doing there? I don't know. What do you think she's doing there? So mentally, you go there and you check. You check and you say, well, she's knitting. Oh, well, that's nice. What is she knitting? Well, she's knitting a shirt or a skirt or she's knitting a scarf. Well, that's nice. What color is it? It's green and blue. Oh, how interesting. And then you say, that's nice. Forget it. Go on to something else. And then later, you're talking to your mother and you say, Mom, I took an out-of-body journey today, and I took a very casual one, and I came to visit you, and I found you at home knitting a scarf of green and blue. And she says, well, how interesting. Did you peek? He says, yeah, I peeked. I came here. No, I mean, did you look in the door, in the window? Did you see me doing that? Because I just put it away. And he says, no. She says, and she brings it out and says, well, look at here. Green and blue scarf. Now, you say, oh, come on, Herb, you're making that up. No. This happens all the time. But you see, this is the problem. If you are trained to walk on fire, to walk on cool, wet moss, if you go to your stove and pick up a red-hot frying pan from the stove, you burn your hands. Now, why do you burn your hands when you pick up a pan from the stove, but you don't burn your feet walking on those coals? Why is that? Anybody know? It's our thought. We conditioned ourselves to walk on that cool, wet moss. You did not condition yourself to pick up that hot frying pan. If you stood before your stove and said, this is a cool frying pan, It's hot on the inside where I cook, but the handle is cool. It's a special design, you know. It's rare, a special design. This frying pan is something very special. And then you reach over and pick up the frying pan in the school. It's all our thought. All of it's our thought. Now, this is not unusual. This happens time and time again. But the people who walk on the cool, wet moss and then pick up a frying pan and get burned do not apply the same principle they did when they walk on the cool, wet moss. You want to walk on the cool, wet moss and you want to pick up that frying pan, you have to have the same condition going on in your mind. You have to have the same confidence in your mind of what it is that you're doing. And if you don't have that same confidence, you're not going to get the same response. It's just that way. You know, you're all laughing. You're all saying, ha, 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 when I say these people in India who lay on a bed of nails. Nails! You know, those sharp nails. They lay on a bed of nails. They're crazy. No. The same as walking on the cool, wet moss. They don't feel those nails. If they felt those nails, they wouldn't do it. Is there one drop of blood from their bodies when they lay on those nails? No. You read about them, you hear the story about them. Not one drop of blood from laying on those nails, because they do not believe in that. They know that this is a bed of wonderful, soft cotton. And that's what it is for them. And that's what it is for us when we take charge of our consciousness. Now, how did you get over to your mother's house and see her knitting that scarf? You mentally said to yourself, I wonder. And you mentally thought mother, and you mentally thought house, and you mentally went there. And you mentally saw her doing whatever it was she was doing, and you realized, hey, pretty cool, pretty wonderful. Now, can you ever do it again? Sure, anytime you want. Can you do something important? Maybe like you need to know a certain something information to build something or to heal something or to whatever, and the information is not on your fingertips, but the information is in Wikipedia on your computer, but you don't have your computer handy. And you know that the information is in the library in London, and so you say, I wonder what it is. Mentally, you go over to the library in London, and you study it, and you read it, you know it, and you have it. Now, you don't have to do that, but it's just kind of fun. Mentally, you go over there and see it, because you saw a picture of the library in London, and you know what it looks like, and so for you to go there is not difficult at all. Now, we have stories that are written by fiction writers who write stories that are not based on fact and based on life. And then these stories later become reality. These stories later become the fact of our life, like the science fiction. The science fiction stories of not too long ago are reality today. And the science fiction stories of today, which are way out of crazy, really, really nutty, and tomorrow, they'll be the reality. You know? I read one science fiction story that I enjoyed very much. It had on board ship a bunk. And everybody would go in there and lay on that bunk for about a half an hour. Every couple of weeks or every year, you know. And they'd lay on that bunk. And when they lay on that bunk, they'd sink into this material which covered them all over their body. And they lay there for maybe 20 minutes or something. And then they get up, they come up, and they're 20 years younger. Every organ, action, function of their body is 20 years younger. Everything about them is 20 years younger. Now, the reason that the writer wrote the story to have that condition exist is so that they could take a trip to the distant place and be able to return and still be the same age they were when they left. But of course, if they were the age that they would be when they came back, they'd be quite old and not able to enjoy it. So here you are, you take a trip into infinity, you come back in 2,000 years, and your world is quite different. your house isn't there anymore, your friends aren't there anybody, you don't even know your family name anymore, because there's been such an intermingling in marriages and in families and so on, that it's just all one big family. Everybody's got the same name, me, or something like that. And you come back and it's a different world for you. Now, would you be happy there? No. Because you're used to having things the way you remembered it. And when you went on your trip, the people in your on your trip were your family. Now, how long did your trip take? Your trip maybe took 30 minutes. And then you're back, but you're in this totally different environment. Now you say, that's crazy. Yeah, it is, isn't it? It is. But could you do that? Is it possible? These are things that are being done right now. These are things that are being done in scientific laboratories right now. You've heard of Uri Geller. Uri Geller is quite a remarkable young man. He's older now. When I worked with him, he was a young man. And he could bend spoons just by looking at them. And he could drive a car down New York City street with a blindfold on his face and drive perfectly proper. Amazing, amazing. And when I was there in Israel one time, he was with a friend who wanted a camera. And the friend didn't have a camera, but he wanted a camera so he could get some pictures. And Yuri said, what kind of camera do you want? He said, oh, like this, like this, like this. And he described a camera that already existed, but he wants to get one like that. So Yuri didn't say anything. And he walked out, and he went to his place. And in a little while, the man went to his room, his hotel room. And there on the bed, in the box, in the manufacturer's box, was this camera, brand new. It didn't have a marketing cue on it. It didn't say who was selling them, or who was sending them, or who bought it and who's selling them. It just was there, a camera, without anything except that it was all there. And the fellow went to Yuri and said, did you do that? And Yuri said, why? He said, well, I don't want something that doesn't belong to me. He said, well, that doesn't belong to anybody. That's my creation. That's totally my creation. But it is a model of a camera from an actual manufacturer. But they never had it. They never was in their hands. They never saw it. They never knew what even that model number was. Not the model number, but the serial number, you know, because that wasn't on their list. And his friend says, I it's too much for me. I can't believe it. But Yuri did many other wonderful things like that. Now, we say that's silly or that's crazy. Why should anyone do that? Well, people do that because it's fun. That's fun. Now, just imagine you're playing with the children and you're sitting on the floor and you say, I'd like a pillow under me. And so, boop, there's a pillow under you. Not bad, huh? Don't even have to get up to get it. And then you're sitting there playing with the kids and you say, I think it'd be fun to play with colored water, colored paints and stuff. And so, zoop, there you are, with 12 buckets of colored paints and sheets of paper or whatever you're painted on. And how are the kids going to get the paint out of the bucket? Well, they got to finger paint it or brush paint it. Well, you got brushes and fingers and everything there. And so the kids play there. And oh, what a mess they make. Everywhere is paint. Everywhere is a mess. It's washable paint, but it's still a lot. And one kid says, look at this. And it was drenched. Drenched with water, drenched with paint, but he had a line on it. And he says, isn't that beautiful? Well, yes, that's wonderful. And just as quickly, the children turn their attention to something else, forgetting the paint. And there you are sitting there with this big mess in front of you, and the kids are off doing something else. Totally not interested any longer in that. And so what do? You do like Emile's mother, you know, in the life and teachings of the masters of the Far East. She snapped her finger and said, you're all put away. No. Stupid! You can't do things like that. That's impossible. Nobody in their right mind can do that. Nobody in their right mind could ever even think of doing that or do it. Well, that's true. In your right mind, you could. If your right mind means that because something is not logical, it's not, you cannot do it. Well, The world is not built on logic. In the first chapter of The Art and Science of Wholeness, we say, in spirit, there is no logic and there is no reason. There's no logic or reason in spirit. Because who's to say why there are so many stars up there? Or why are there so many grains of sand on the seashore? Or why there are so many people? And why, at one time in our culture, everybody was the same color. Another time, everybody's different colors. Another time, they're speaking different languages. Another time, they're speaking the same language again. And boop, doop, 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 going back and forth. You say, really? Sure. The tectonic plates are sliding over the top of the earth, and they change the culture, they change the attitude of the earth from time to time, and we don't even know about it. We don't even know about it, nor do we care. But if we were able to see what happens when those tectonic plates slide, we would see that all of the cultural significance that had been there before is no longer there. All the things that once were are changed. Now they say that the system of our universe is, 15 billion years old. They say our planetary system is 15 billion years old. Well now, why is it 15 billion years old? Why not 15 and 1? Or why not 18 billion? Or why not 100 billion? Or why not 2 billion? 2 billion is more than anyone can understand. A billion is more than anyone can understand. Any number you choose is more than anyone. Well, the writer who wrote the theory, Big Bang Theory, he decided he'd say 15 billion. And so, all the scientists read, oh, yes, that's true. Oh, yes, that's true. They don't know that. That's a theory. A theory is somebody's idea. They don't know. But the writer said 15 billion, and now everybody thinks it's 15 billion. Isn't that exciting? My goodness. How can they do that? How can they say those things when they just are not so? Because you have the right, not right, but you have the privilege, you have the opportunity to be as crazy, as unreasonable, unrighteous as you want to be and have it happen. Have you ever done anything that worked that shouldn't have worked? You did a lot of things. Right now you can't think of it. Most of the time, when things work that shouldn't work, you forget about it. Because if you tell people, they say, ah, sure. Ah, sure. What do you think? Do you think that a girl could step through a looking glass and go into the adventure of Alice in Wonderland? Do you think that Mickey Mouse could have a wife and could talk and have a life of his own? Do you think that Popeye could exist? Do you think the cartoon characters are real or are they just fiction? Well, depends. We live in a universe which has next to it an infinite number of parallel universes. And each of these parallel universes has within it the experiences that we are going through, plus many others. Some of them have the cartoon characters as the preeminent attitudes of that universe. Some of them have us as absolutely good people, absolutely fantastic people. We're all living in our original purity and integrity. How do you like that? We're all living in our original purity and integrity. And then one of the universes, that's a parallel universe, we are all what we would call evil or ugly people. Evil or ugly people. Who wants to be evil or ugly? Well, we do. We do. Do you know that every time you say it can't be done, you're being evil and ugly? Every time you say something can't be done, you are saying that you're evil and ugly, because you're saying the infinite cannot create in the way that you're thinking of that. And we cannot say that. For if we ever say the infinite cannot create in any particular way, what are we doing? What we are doing, we are saying there's a limit to the universe. Now, I'm going to ask this question, and I know everybody's going to answer. Can God be limited? God cannot be limited. There is just no way you can limit the creative consciousness that brought the world, the universe into being, and is the foundation of our thinking, our attitude, our way. No one can limit that. You cannot. Can God have positive and negative universes and all these things going on? Sure. Now, let's back off a little bit there. Now, the universal consciousness, God, the universal consciousness of all, does not create parallel universes, okay? The universal consciousness of all does not create negative and positive. The universal consciousness of all creates all, but doesn't know it. It creates all, but it's not aware of it. It creates all, and it's not aware of it, because if it were aware of any one of its creation, it would be whatever that one creation is, and it'd be limited to that. Now, the universal is not limited by anything. So, if I say to you, okay, here you are, here's a box of books, and in these books is a total course of education at the university. You read this box of books, and you'll be brilliant. So, you say, boy, oh boy, that's nice. So you take the box of books, and you put them under your pillow. You have a high bed with lots of mattresses. And you put them under your pillow, and you say, I am absorbing this knowledge. And you say, well, you are really way out. You are really crazy. But in Star Trek, they had a special room. It's just a closet. And you walk in this closet, as big as the kitchen maybe. You walk in the closet, and then you go to the wall, and there are several devices at the wall, and you pick up one of them, and you put it on your temple, one each side, and then you press a button saying you want world knowledge, world science, you want world this, or you want the universal, all this, everything, okay? So you press the button, and you now have in you all that knowledge. Now this is from Star Trek. And so, if you want to use any knowledge at all, you must think the thought about that knowledge to bring it forth out of the allness in you. If you don't think the thought, you will not have that knowledge. You have that knowledge in you, but until you think the thought about it, it's not available to you. The knowledge is in your inner bank, but your inner bank does not make it available to you until you clue into it, much like a computer. Now, the infinite creative cause of all has all that in it, all that, everything, it created everything. Every single thing is in it, and it's good, everything is in it. And so, the infinite creative cause does not want to think about algebra. It has no interest in algebra. It does not want to think about geography. It does not want to think about human beings. What does it want to think about? Nothing. The infinite creative cause does not want to think about anything. It is everything. It does not want to think about it. It is everything. If the infinite creative cause were to think of any one thing, it would be that one thing, and it would be the rest of its absolute knowledge would not be available to it. Now you say, well, if it cannot think about anything without losing everything, then it doesn't really have anything because it cannot think about it. Well, that's true. But you, in your wisdom, in your magnificence, you can create a consciousness that can be aware of its infinite self, can be aware of all knowledge, individually, selectively, or totally, and always remain aware of who it is. Now, you say, that would be a difficult thing to do. Because every time the infinite thinks about any one thing, it is that one thing, and it's not infinite anymore. If I think of Nigeria, and I think of the city here, and I think of the world here, the moment I think about Nigeria, my consciousness is in Nigeria. So my consciousness is not in the world. Now, the moment I think of the world, I think of London, or New York, or China, or India, I'm there. And my thinking capacity appears to be able to only encompass one jump at a time. But I can do it. I can do it. And you do. We do it. We jump from city to city, from world to world, thing to thing. But each time we go there, we do it. Now, I read the manual on one of my computers on the way over on the aircraft. And when I left San Francisco, I was reading the manual. And when I got to London, I was just finished with the manual. And I learned all the manual. I didn't know that I traveled. I had no idea that my body was here and now it's here. When I went out the plane, San Francisco wasn't there. San Francisco was way back there someplace. Now, you say, well, that's natural, that's obvious. No, it isn't. I was in San Francisco, and I did not give myself permission to leave San Francisco. Mentally, I was reading my book in San Francisco. But I somehow allowed myself to go to London. Now you say, so, what's the big deal about that? Well, it's just a matter. If we want to, even now, we can create ourselves anywhere we want to be. We can create ourselves in any great, grand experience or any smaller experience. We can create ourselves in any type of activity that we want to create ourselves in, and it's okay. It's okay. You can do that. But if you do that, you are messing up the whole spectrum of how things work. Now, let me say this to you. Who set up the spectrum of how things work? You did. You set up the spectrum of walking on fire or walking on cool and moss. You set up the spectrum of how you're going to use your mind. You set up the spectrum of how you're going to live in this world. That's you. Totally you. Now, what are you going to do about that? Can you change it? Can you change it? Can you take the story of Alice in Wonderland and make it George in Wonderland? And have George go down the tube there and have those interesting experiences? Sure. Or Alice and George, both. However you want to do it. You can have a lot of fun with this. Just let your mind wander. Let your mind be creative. And as you do that, then you too will not only walk on cool and moss, but you will transport the entire universe in an instant. It's up to you how you want to do it. Now, I spoke to you earlier today, or earlier this week, about balance and how balance is so very, very important for your body and your mind and your life. And when you have a balanced mind and a balanced body, your health is exquisite. Everything about you is exquisite. Now, I had you get up and demonstrate that. Now, who wants to demonstrate for us how it works? Okay, you understand? Now, tell us what you're going to do. All right. You're going to pull up your pants. Okay. Pull down your shirt. You take your computer out of your wallet. Oh. Your knee level with your tummy. And then you move your leg to the one direction. And then the other direction. And you do that from 1 to 10 times. If one time is all many people can in the begining. And then, what do you do next?
Peace.
What do you do next?
I change.
The other leg. You do the other leg. And you move that back and forth. You don't swing it. You just move it with a decision. To swing it like this here, it doesn't make the balance. It's when you move it with decision this way and that way, like he's doing there. He's moving it with decision. And because he's moving it with decision, now we'll have him stand here for the next half hour and do that. And you know what would happen to him if he was able to really do that? He would be the most balanced person that you've ever met. Thank you.
Thank you.
And listen. Now, this is developed by a team of space doctors for the astronauts as they return from being out in orbit, from being in gravity-less space. And when they're in gravity-less space for any period of time, they lose their balance. They lose their sensitivity. They lose their ability to have their bodies function in perfect harmony. And so the space doctors have developed this technique here, which has proved to be very effective, because what you're doing, you're moving your leg here and moving it here, and when you're moving it, you are moving it so that it connects to all the ligaments and all the activities of your body, and it gives you a peace. Now, in the beginning, naturally Endless, being the young, dynamic guy that he is, he didn't have to hold on to anything as he was doing this. You might want to hold on to a chair or a table or something as you're doing it, and that's okay. Now, I have worked it with one of the ladies on campus, well, with all of them, but one of the ladies on campus who was having a very difficult time with balance. And she was having a difficult time with balance because she wanted everything everybody else had. And everybody else was having some little operation, so she wanted one too. So she wanted a new ball in her joint, in her hip, and a new thing in her ankle, you know, in her foot. So she said, okay, do what you want to do. It's your body. So she had them replaced. The ball in her hip, they took out one night, put a new one in, and the next morning she went home. And they did the same thing about 2 months later with the ball in her joint. And I said, you don't really need that. You're just fine. And whenever I dance with her, she danced just beautiful, straight as an arrow. But whenever I let go of her, she waddled like a duck, you know, because she was not sure of herself. Here is where the ball should have been placed, you know, in her mind. She should have really taken this exercise program of balance. And if she had done that, she wouldn't have had any balls replaced. But she did, and they're perfect. There's no problem. But she has the same problem because it never was addressed. Now I'm addressing it. So I tell her what she's supposed to do. She is supposed to, every time she gets up from a chair, she stands there and moves one leg, then the other leg, as many times as she can, from 1 to 10. And every single day. And then, when she gets out of bed, from her nap or from sleeping, then she moves the leg one after the other. Now, out of 30 times of sitting up or getting out of bed and so on, she did it at least 4 times. Now, isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? I asked her to do it, and I had her do it in front of me, and I said, now see how it works? And she said, yeah. I said, can you feel how relaxed you are? Can you feel how your nerves are all balanced? Can you feel how the new sense of balance comes over your body? Yeah, yeah. But she did not do it consistently when I was away. Why did she not want to do it consistently while I was away? She didn't want to do it consistently because it was a bother to remember to do it. It was a bother. And she didn't want to be bothered. Now, isn't that silly? If she were to apply that for 1 week, just 1 week, that program, that's what they recommend. If she were to apply it for 1 week, she would be in perfect balance. Now, we all are our worst enemy when it comes to having beautiful things happen in our life. And we don't want to go along with the program that we have set for ourselves. We have set these programs for ourselves because they work, because they're good, because they do great things for us, but we don't apply them. We just do not apply them. Now, is there anything simpler than the program that Endless showed us? Isn't that a simple program? Yes? Yeah, very simple. I mean, even Endless can do it. You know. No, it's very simple. We can do it easily because it doesn't take any brains. It just takes moving for a little bit on that one thing. Now, when I was in Europe, I told the groups about it too. And 2 or 3 people wanted to do it and did it in the group. But the rest of the group didn't do it. I'm not entering something like that. I'm not doing something like that. And these people that didn't do it were all the ones who came for a healing seminar from the University of Healing, hoping that there was a healing treatment for them. Well, now, they wouldn't know a healing treatment if it stood out in front of them, because I was giving them the healing treatment for just the things that they wanted, because that's what that works for. Just the things that you want. Change your whole body structure, change your whole mind, change your whole attitude, and just make you into a totally beautiful person. Now, you have another technique which we used earlier, and that's the technique of the light. I am the light. I am the light. You are the light. Now, tonight, when you go home to your family, take your hand with all the love of your heart and put it on the forehead of your wife or husband or your children or anybody. Just take your hand and put it there. And then say, I love you, I love you, I love you. You know, just say it, really, with all your heart and all your snickering. I love you, I love you, I love you. You know, and it's not funny, but it means, I love you. And then you watch. You will feel a oneness, a merging of energy that you never knew you had. It's a merging of energy that brings about a tremendous healing if you have the strength to carry through on it. Now, I can tell you how to carry through on it if you want, but if you're not going to carry it out, there's no sense in for me to bother doing that. So, now we go on to the next one. The next one, you like that?
Yes.
You like that?
Yes.
What do you like?
To tell us how to carry.
What's that?
The techniques.
Well, what do you like?
Tell us the technique.
Oh! She wants to know the steps.
Yes.
She wants to know the steps. Oh. Now the rest of you want to know it, huh? Oh, we'll talk about it personally. They don't want to know.
Okay.
You want to know too?
Yes.
Okay. I teach the energy massage, which is a very wonderful massage. And you take your hand over your skin. If you touch, it's okay, but try not to. Just be above the skin, just a quarter of an inch. And go over it and say, I like me, 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 I like me. Go over your entire body saying, I like me, I like me, maybe three or four times. And do that maybe once or twice a day. You will find all the organs, actions, and functions of your body begin to function in a very beautiful, harmonious way. Now, what we were talking about is calling forth the light energy. Now, at the Menier Institute, we were dealing with light, and we were dealing with the sun, we were dealing with biofeedback, we're dealing with all of these different types of energy sources. Not really sources, biofeedback energy recorder, not a source. It just tells you what's happening. So here we have all of this stuff going on, and we have the opportunity, I think I mentioned this to you earlier, we have the opportunity of having it work. So Dr. Elmer Green, who heads the alternative studies group, he had his daughter come into his office. I tell you about that. And when the daughter came in, the daughter was about 26, and she said, Dad, I got a splitting headache. I just feel terrible. And I got to take an exam, and I don't know what to do. And her father said, Sweetheart, you went with me to India. You saw how they handled it. You saw what we did there. You know the things we've learned. Apply it. But Dad, you can do it so much quicker, you know. And he said, Sweetheart, I want you to do it for yourself because I want you to see the results. So he said to her, you did an example, you did a test, so to speak, and the test was that you changed the temperature at 4 to 5 places on your palm of your hand mentally. And you put a transistor here, this mister here, and then one here and here and 5 of them. And then you said, this is a certain temperature, this is a certain temperature, this is a certain temperature, this and this are each certain temperatures. Now, can you tell me what you think is happening? What do you think is happening? She was able to put the temperature right where she wanted to on her hand, because that was just scientific thing of how to do it. You think about it, and the temperature is there. You think about it, the temperature is there. You think about yourself, you're hot. You say, I'm cool, I'm cool, I'm cool. And you stop thinking about being hot, you can be very comfortable, truly. So she did this. And she put it here and there and put it here and there. And so she said, yeah, Dad, that works. And he said, okay, bye. Okay. She said goodbye. He didn't say, is your headache gone? He knew it was gone. Because she now concentrated on these five areas to make them one area. But she concentrated on something else other than her headache. And her headache did not receive any feedback, and so it went away. Our headaches can be solved by putting your thumb between your two fingers like this and pressing firmly, and you hold that for a minute or two. And if you do that for a minute or two, any headache, both sides, you know, or if you do it for someone else too, any headache you have will dissipate within about 2 or 3 minutes and stay gone. Stay gone. Migraine or whatever the headache may be. Now, these are controlling your energy panels. These are controlling the energy viaducts in your body, in your mind, in your soul, in your world. And you are the master of them. You are the master. What was her name? A woman I was working with at the United Church. She, I keep wanting to say Thelma Moss, but she was at the university. But anyhow, this woman was from Russia. And as a little girl, she had a talent, a gift. And her gift was, whenever anything was sick or anybody was sick, she would go over there and hold their hand, and within a few minutes they'd be perfect. Really fantastic, huh? So her mother would always send her to the neighbor's house whenever the neighbor had a problem, and she'd hold her hand, and in a few minutes the neighbor would be saying, okay, bye-bye, you know. She didn't know what she was doing. She didn't know. Olga Morel was her name. Olga Morel. She didn't know what she was doing. So she came to this country as a psychiatrist and as a medical doctor. And her husband was a scientist and a engineer. So they were working. He had gifts also. He would send energy from his solar plexus across the United States to people who wanted it as a demonstration. He didn't do that all the time because that just wasn't what he wanted to do. But he did it to prove he could do it. And once he did prove he could do it, others could do it. They could find the technique that he followed to use it. They never found it, but they could find the technique and hopefully teach other people how to do it too. Well, Olga and Ambrose worked together very closely on healing program projects. And they did very beautifully. But Olga, this great healer, was sitting in a meeting with me and a few other people, and she said, I have a sprain sort of in my neck. She was about 82 at the time. She said, I've been going around lecturing. She said, I'm just drained. And so this medical doctor and an acupuncturist was sitting next to her, and he said, well, let me put a couple needles in for you. So we're sitting there at the dinner table, eating our dinner. And he puts a needle in here, a needle in there, a needle in there. And then we're eating. And so we're talking and sharing things like that. And then maybe about half an hour goes by. And he said, just let me take the needles out. Doop, 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 doop. And she didn't even know that she didn't have her headache anymore. She didn't even know that she didn't have the problem anymore. Because he had used the acupuncture to relieve it from the meridian structure of the body. Now that's all fantastic and exciting stuff. I gave you a cross section of that, much of that, because I wanted you to see it's not just in one area. It's not just in one area. Edgar Mitchell of Apollo 14, I performed the wedding for he and his wife, went up to outer space, and another man from Earth sent messages to him on a spaceship. And so at a certain time, he was supposed to write down the messages, and they had a double blind on the man on Earth to make sure that the messages he sent were the ones that they knew about him. So Edgar came back, and the two got together, and they shared whatever they did exactly the same. He was able to communicate with this person about them. Edgar Mitchell was up on the moon, and There's no time, no space. We keep saying that, but we don't want to believe it. There is only now. And as we work in the now, as we live in the now, we experience some great things in the now. Now, what do you want to experience in your life? Okay, now those are just a few things to tickle your appetite. We have the balance technique, which is a very good one. If you use it, you'll be very happy you do. Another one is a single one-pointed affirmation technique that brings results. The single one-pointed affirmation technique that brings results. I set my paper on top of the microphone down here. So, we set the we have the single one-pointed affirmation that brings results. What single one-pointed affirmation brings results? Each of us has a tendency to drift from where we are. We have a tendency to say, he's whole and perfect, I hope. He's whole and perfect, maybe. He's whole and perfect, it'd be nice if he were. He's whole and perfect, but look at the symptoms. Look at what's going on. Look at what, they've taken him away to the hospital. They've done this, they've done that. It's hard to be one-pointed, whole and perfect when you have so many outer objective things going on. Well, I told you the story about my son when they took him to the hospital because he fell down in the parking lot and maybe cracked his head, but he was unconscious. And when he went to the hospital, I was with him. And I said at all times, you're whole and perfect, you're whole and perfect. And all the people around me thought I was crazy talking to this kid saying he's whole and perfect. And he's, 18, 20 at the time, and you're whole and perfect, you're whole and perfect, you're whole and perfect. And then he came to. He said, I know, Dad, you know, I know our philosophy, you know, I know it, you know. And I said, you're whole and perfect, you're whole and perfect, and then drift away. Well, they took an x-ray, and in the x-ray, it showed something. And I didn't believe that. And so then, a few moments later, they said, now let's take another x-ray, and we take it in the other room with this very still machine. Well, we don't have any help here because it's late at night. Can you hold his head while the x-ray is being taken? Oh, you bet I could. I held his head rock solid. There's not a jigger in it, you know. And so they took the x-ray. Nothing wrong. Nothing wrong, you know. Nothing wrong. I was able to keep his head still so that the x-ray would show nothing, no vibration, no anything. And then he was able to drive home because he was so perfect. But you see, you say, well, maybe there was nothing wrong with him. Maybe. What do you think I think? Anybody? What do you think I think? There was nothing wrong with him. That's what I think. If I ever thought there was something wrong with him, I'd be making trouble for him. He's whole and perfect, yes, but there's nothing wrong with him. There's nothing wrong with him. When we look at people with problems and we say, they have a problem, they got this, they got that, when we can say there's nothing wrong with them, now, they don't like it when we say this because they're hurting. They got problems, they got illnesses and stuff. And when we say there's nothing wrong with them, they say we're not being sympathetic, you know, we're not being understanding. And they're right. They're right. We are not being understanding of the illness. We're only being understanding of the truth. We're calling forth the truth for them of their ideal spirit, mind, and body. Now that's a very difficult thing to do because we are creatures of illusion. We look at the outer appearance and we say that's the truth. We look at the outer appearance and we say that's what it is. Really, I read a magazine and I brought it along, and in the magazine it says that there is a technique used by the Russians here since 1920 where you take swamp water and then you put a few drops of whatever your illness is in that swamp water, and then that swamp water shake it up and then you drip it on your illness, and within a short time the illness should clear itself. Well, now that's stupid. That's utterly stupid. But millions of people have used it effectively. And people are using it effectively today. They had a big article in the Popular Science magazine all about it for this month, April. It's fantastic. If you read it, you'll be amazed. But what the reason I'm telling you the story is not because of what they said, but I'm telling you because of what they said. In the beginning of the article, they tell how it works so perfectly. And at the end of the article, they tried to protect their bottom. They tried to protect themselves from people saying, but it didn't work for us, or this, it did a bad thing or something. And then they say, it is not accepted by the Drug Association. It's not accepted by this. It's not, of course not. Can you imagine the Drug Association accepting swamp water, you know, with all the bacteria in it, and these bacteria come in 100 million different types, and who's going to evaluate that? Well, the group in Russia are evaluating it pretty well, and they're helping on the most horrendous type of diseases that need to be treated, and they're very effective. Now, if you read the article in the beginning, you say, wow, and then you read the article at the end, and it says, but it's not proven, but this, but that, but side effects are not known. Well, goody, 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 you know. Isn't that wonderful? Do you know what the side effects are of the pills that you're taking? If you have a cold, it says, this will cause side effects of headache, blurry vision, this will cause you to be dizzy, this will cause you, don't use around machines, you've read that, huh? Don't use when you're driving a car, you know. My goodness sakes, you know. They have enough side effect evidence of things that we're using that if there's something that really does great work, they ought to teach that. Now, Elmer Green taught his daughter how to use the biofeedback and how to use the temperature ranges of her hand. And it worked. But it didn't only work for headaches. It worked for every illness that they tried it on. Every illness. Because what they did, they diverted your attention from the illness to the one-pointed proposition of changing the temperature of your hand. Now, if you were asked to sit out in the sun, and you were asked to sit out there and be untouched by the sun, could you do it? Not too easily, because you are so readily thinking, it's sunny, it's hot, I should get out of here. Okay, let's take a desert boy. A desert boy who herds goats in the hillsides. And he's out there naked in the sun all day long with his goats and his two shoes and maybe a sarong of some sort. But that's all. And he's out there. Now, if you could ask that boy this question, think what his answer might be. If you would ask that boy, is it hot out there? Is it cold at night when you lay down and sleep with no blanket? Is it windy and terrible out there when the wind comes, just roars through there and almost blows you away? You know what the boy would say? I hadn't noticed. I hadn't noticed. That's not his consciousness. If he is concerned about the wind, the heat, the cold, he'll kill himself. He'll kill himself because then he worries about those things. He thinks those things are controlling his life and controlling his living, controlling his existence. Now, let's take one of you. Yes, Mr. Stanislaus, we'll take you. Yeah. And we'll put you out here in the yard. And we'll put you out there all day long, sitting on a chair. Whether you're dressed or not, that's your business. Okay, you're sitting in a chair. And it's a hot day. It's a sunny day here in Nigeria, you know, all day long. And the sun is beaming down on you. You have no hat. And you're sitting there, and you're told to sit there and be untouched. Okay. So the first thing you do, you're one-pointed with your affirmation. And you say to yourself, I am comfortable. This is so wonderful. I just feel a cool breeze wafting across my body. I feel great. Everything is perfect. Everything is fantastic. I feel just great. And then evening comes. And we go out there and say, hey, Stan, how you doing, baby? And you say, oh, hi, just fine. Was it a hot day? I hadn't noticed. Was it a cold day? I hadn't noticed. Did it rain fall? I hadn't noticed. What were you doing? You're sitting out there all the time. Well, I was meditating on how nice it is to be whole and perfect all the time. And that's the only thought I had in my mind. My only thought was, I am warm and comfortable and peaceful. Everything is in divine order. That's all that happened. Well, what happened to him? That's what happened. We have at the ranch up in the mountains, 104 acres. And we have people coming up there from time to time. They bring their families along. And one woman brought her three sons along. And she's a redhead. And, you know, light skin, really light. And her sons are all redheads. And she is milk lactose intolerant. She can't drink milk. And the kids can't drink milk. Ha, ha, ha. And so she also can't go out in the sun or she'll burn terribly. And the kids can't go out in the sun or they'll burn terribly. And the father said he doesn't eat carrots, and so the kids don't eat carrots, you know. Well, she left the kids with us. And the first thing I said to the kids was, boy, are you going to have fun up here. You're going to have milk to drink that comes from up here, and it doesn't have the lactose in it that has down below. So you have no problem there. That you can drink milk all you want, and you will be just as happy as can be. And they did. And carrots, oh my goodness, we're going to feed you so many carrots so you have night vision. Of course, it doesn't work that way, but it's a good story. That you're going to have night vision, that you can look around and you can see the owls flying at night, and you can see all they ate carrots going out of style. And then these kids that had to be covered from the sun, we had a plastic swimming pool out there, about 15 feet across, about 3 feet high, really nice. And so the kids went out there. Well, at first they had bathing suits on. Then they took their bathing suits off. And then they were playing in the pool. And they were running around. And they came out of the pool, naked as jaybirds, running all over the place. The sun on the high desert is pretty warm. But they didn't even feel that. And they jumped in the pool and jumped out. And they ran around. And when supper time came, come on in and eat. They came in and ate. And then after supper, they ran back out and jumped in the pool again. They're just having a ball. So the next day, same thing. The next day, same thing. Day after day. They turned brown as bears. Absolutely beautiful tans. No burns, no suntan lotion. And no burns whatsoever, because we told them the sun up here kisses you all the time. It's always kissing your body. The sun is always kissing you, kissing. Sun is saying, I love you, I love you, I love you. And they looked at the sun like that. And that's how they experienced the sun. Now, these are true facts. These are things that happen to all of us. These are things that when we are in charge of our world, when we're in charge of our experiences, we have some pretty wonderful experiences. Now, do you think you could be those kids? Sure. But you'd have to play the game. And are you a game player? A lot of people think they're game players, but they're really not. They're afraid. They're afraid. I say, jump off the edge of the pool. Oh, no, no, I'm going to crawl in. You know. Well, you're going to get wet jumping or crawling in, no matter what you do on our swimming pools. And, well, I'll go in the pool down in the embassy. That's a heated pool. Okay, whatever is your game. But they don't have any fun. But the kids, oh, they just run around having a ball because they're free spirits. Now, do you want to be a free spirit?
Yes.
If you want to be a free spirit, then you let go of all your inhibitions. And you realize that all the things that you have learned about the sun burning you, all the things that you've learned about certain things not being proper for your body, like the lactose intolerance of milk, or certain vegetables that do not benefit certain people. Well, whenever I get people who are not benefited by certain things, I read up on my Wikipedia all about that vegetable, all about its good points and all about its bad points. And then I start a concerted effort to talk to them about all of its good points. And by the time I'm done, they cannot wait to get going on those vegetables. And it does not disturb them in the slightest, because they're hearing only its good points. They're not hearing. But you see, the medical profession today, the scientists today, more of the scientists, I have a problem. because they do research on sugar, and they say that sugar is bad. It does this, it does that, it destroys the teeth, and so on. Now, the doctors, the dentists, they say, no, that is not true. Sugar does not hurt the teeth. Sugar does not destroy anything. The doctors want you to have teeth that need help, and so they tell you that the sugar is good. No, truly they do. And they tell you that these carbonated drinks are good, whereas we know they destroy your teeth. They destroy them completely. Now, if that's what you want, good. Okay. I tell these people, you're untouched by anything like that. Because one day you're not supposed to have salt, the next day you're supposed to have salt, you should have so much salt or so little salt, and that's in addition to the salt that's in the foods that you're getting. But you see, all of these things come. Now, what are we going to use as a guide for us? What are we going to use as a guide for how we are going to choose the type of appetite that we have, the type of foods that we eat, the type of things that we put in our bodies? Well, that we have to come up with. You have to be your own master. I was in the doctor's office the other day, and I said to him, well, what do you find? He said, oh, you're perfect. I said, thank you. And I said, well, what can I do for this, this, and this? He said, well, I could tell you, but I have to research it. Now, you can go into Wikipedia and research it yourself, and then you have it right away, and you have a copy of it. So, well, what do you want? I will look it up for you, but then I'll make another visit with you to me if you want, or you can look it up yourself. So I looked it up myself, and I found out exactly what I wanted to. But I also learned how to look it up. I learned how to find out all the things I wanted to know, and there it was, just as easy as could be. Wonderful. So often we want to always depend on someone else for advice as to who and what we are. And that's kind of a waste. That's kind of a waste for us. Okay. Let's see. Specifically use thought energy for desire. Feel and see how it functions. I'm thinking of different illustrations that have come to my mind. Okay, I was in Prague, Czechoslovakia, at the First International Congress of Parapsychology and Psychotronics in 1972, and Russia was still Russia with Brezhnev and all the other people who were still kind of hard. And so we were all there. I was one of 75 scientists from throughout the world who were invited to attend that conference. And at the conference, the the women who wrote Healing Behind the Iron Curtain were there, and they were telling us all about these people who made these balls roll across the table mentally, you know, and how they accomplished things. There were engineers there who were trying to prove them wrong, who looked for magnetic energies and other things that they might have been using. And they didn't realize that you could do anything you want to do. So, as they were doing all these things, they were having a lot of interesting experiments. And different people were being checked. Different people. And then they found they had, even on the auras, they had a display on that, telling you how the auras work, how the extension of energy from your body functions, and how much energy you have. And then they gave us each a reading of our hands, so we could see how the energy extended from our fingertips. And one person had a fingertip cut off, and the energy extension of the energy body was still there, even though the mass of the finger wasn't there, because it was in the design. And they said that if you wanted to, like a chameleon, you could grow that fingertip back without any trouble. Now, they didn't do it, but it would be fine to see. They had a number of young children there, and they hypnotized the children and told them that they were great pianists and great violinists and great musicians, and the kids were exquisite. Now, I presumed that the kids didn't know how to play, because they tried to be honest, you know, in the thing, but I presume they didn't know how to play. But it was just amazing to see how that was done. Now, that's one-pointed. That's specifically use thought energy for your desire and feel and know how it functions. We can do that. We can know how to do that. I have a perfect nose. I have a perfect head. I have a perfect sinus. Everything about me is perfect. My voice comes through just like the lyric of an angel. You know, I am fantastic. I'm glorious. I'm wonderful. I believe it. I feel good. And I know you feel good too, because you're sitting here enjoying what we're doing. Okay. Now, here is a technique for you to work on to accomplish a magic. Now you say, okay, magic, all right. I have asked several to write fantasize on circumstances and conditions in their life experience that they're enjoying. I have asked a number of you to visualize going home to your wife, and your wife says to you, oh, sweetheart, you're the greatest. You're the most wonderful person in the world. And you say to her, you're the most wonderful person in the world. And they are both fantastic, wonderful people in the world. And as they do this, what happens? They experience a nicer relationship. Then I said, okay, now imagine whatever you want to be. Don't do it. Just imagine it. Just imagine you going home and kissing your wife on the neck and saying, oh, wow, what a woman I have here. What a beautiful, fantastic lady. What a marvelous being. Wow. But don't do it. Just visualize it. Just write it down. Just visualize it. Visualize it. Do this for a period of time, maybe a week. And then at the end of the week, go and kiss your wife on the neck and see if she what she says. Now, what she will say to you is, I felt you doing that every day. Every day I felt you doing that. Just, I just knew that you were doing that. I knew that was you. Someone was doing it. Every time they weren't there. How did you do that? You know, but I knew it was you. Or something of that nature. Now, this is a special type of energy. A special type of energy that is used to accomplish this. And it's an energy that we have in our consciousness, an energy that we have in our thinking, an energy that we have in our life that is just utterly magical. And it's the kind of energy that I'd like to see each one of us use. How about that? Do you think your wife would feel that way?
Yes.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. You've trained her well, haven't you?
Yes.
Or she's trained you well.
I've trained her well.
You tell her that now, huh? Well, that's great. That's great. Okay, let's see what we have here now. Turn your total attention to another direction to change any area of your life. So, you're having an area of your life that you have in harmony. You have an illness, and you're working on that illness. Can you turn your attention to a totally another area of your life? Can you turn your attention to something else? Can you go out and work in the garden? Can you go out and sweep the leaves from around your property? Can you take a long walk? And on your long walk, can you say, I am the pure white light of love. I walk in peace. I walk in greatness. And as you do this, you experience that. But can you do that? Can you really go and do this, changing your thought from whatever it is you're doing to something else? Well, if you can, you will have a great experience. This is, we were at the Menninger Foundation in their project, and what they had us do in the project was to practice all of these things, to demonstrate all of these things. And I'll tell you a very quickie on that. One of the ways that we were shown how to get into this altered state of consciousness in a very quick, in a very rapid way, is to do the Sufi dance. Now, if any of you know what the Sufi dance is, it's quite charming. What they do, they dance in circles. put their hands up in the air and go in circles and go in circles and go in circles until they collapse. And when they collapse, they're in another state of consciousness. Now, they don't know what state of consciousness they're in. They don't know what benefit is to come from them, but they're in another state of consciousness very quickly. I'm telling you this not so that you go and do it, but so that when you are ever aware of a person getting their energy up and going in such a way that they're out of control, they're not benefiting themselves or anybody else. They're called mentally unbalanced. And when people become mentally unbalanced, if they're in your world at all, you just teach them to do the first one here, learn the balance technique. And when you teach them to do, don't tell them what you're doing. Just say, play a game with me. Play a game. Let's see who can do this longest. Let's see who can do this here. Let's play a game. You see, you don't tell people they have problems. You don't tell people that they're going to get a healing from this. Let them get it, not knowing what's happening. And you'll be the greatest blessing in their life. This works. And this works all the time. So, those are some of the things that I think are good. There are many, many more. But to go into many, many more at this moment is not practical for me. But tomorrow we'll have our last set of lectures at 9, is it?
Yes, 9.
What time?
9.
At 9. So I'm right. At 9. You should have said yes. Tomorrow we're going to have our first set of lectures at 9, and then we will have our conclusion. But I know that all of you want to be here, and all of you want to bring your brothers and your mothers and your sisters and your aunts and your husbands and your children and your dogs and your cats and whoever else that you can think of bringing, so we can have a very pleasant farewell for the seminar that we have at this moment. Are there any questions right now? If you have questions, it would be nice if you could write them down. But if not, go ahead and ask. Go ahead.
Yes. I asked this question yesterday.
You're what?
I asked this question yesterday. You know, this is a balancing technique. It's very simple. Quite all right. But then, the possibility of doing it each time one gets up from a chair is very, I don't know. The possibility of doing it each time one gets up from a chair.
Well, you are dying, and you will be dead in 2 weeks. And there's nothing that can save you. And the doctor says, that's what it is. Now, if you will do this exercise, there is a good chance that you'll survive. If you'll do this exercise as we tell you how to do it, there's a good chance you'll survive. Now, if you want to do the 3-hour meditation according to your pleasure, go ahead. You won't get the results, but don't blame us, because you're not following the doctor's prescription. If you do this exercise, as we suggest, every time you get up from a chair, you take your leg. For 1 week only, that's all I said. 1 week only. For 1 week only. Every time you get up, you take your leg and move it back and forth. And every time you get out of bed, you do it. Now, yes, I do expect that if you want to have the results, you do that. Now, your question?
No. Even in the public.
You're free.
You are saying that you are in a public place?
Yes.
Please. Look at me. Look at me. You are saying you're in a public place? Okay. You're in a public place. And people will laugh at you. People think you're silly. And then you just make sure you have a little child along with you and have the little child do it with you. Say, let's play a game. And you stand up with the child and play a game. Or you're in a public place and you're with your wife and children, or you're just with yourself. And you stand up and you say, And then somebody comes over and says, what are you doing? And you say, well, I'm conducting a seminar on balance, and I'm just trying out the exercise that I recommend to my students to use in the seminar. And it's an exercise where you lift your leg level with your body, and then you move it this way and this way, 10 times, 1 to 10 times, and then the next one. Every time you get up off a chair, every time you get out of it, for 1 week. And if at the end of the week, rather at the end of that week, you will experience balance in your mind and your body and everything. And the person, well, let's try it with you, you know. Everybody will want to do it if you have the guts to say it, if you have the courage to tell them what you're doing. But you see, another thing, another very important thing, I say I'm number one. And I really don't care if people are amused at what I do or not. I don't care if people laugh at me and the projects that I do, because I do a lot of laughable things. And it doesn't bother me at all. I get in the swimming pool and I swim like a dolphin. I walk up and down the trails of the mountain there like a 25-year-old kid that I am. And I'm up and down there, and I walk with people who cannot walk, and that is who are younger than I am by many, 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 many years, and they can't do what I do. Well, I'm up there all the time, that's why. But I teach them how to breathe. I teach them how to enjoy walking up the mountain. And when I teach them how to enjoy walking up the mountain, they walk with me. But no, if we are afraid people are going to laugh at us, then we're letting the world stop us from being all that we can be. Because you're a good man. And if you think the world's laughing at you over anything, you're dead. But if you, as a good man, are doing something silly in the eyes of the world, and the world says, what are you doing? Well, my doctor said, if I do this for 1 week, every day, every time I get up, that I will overcome my cancer, or whatever you want to say to him. And they say, wow, what's he taught you to do? You know, I want to do it too. You know, I would tell my mother about it. I'll tell my sister about it. You know, don't say something terrible like cancer. But say any disease, any illness. If I do that, any illness. And I've been experiencing a couple of illnesses, and the doctor says I should. But that's lying. Well, you don't have to tell them that you're your doctor. You are your own doctor. I was in the office group, and I was on a water fast. You know what a water fast is? Just drinking water. So I came in the office, I would go to lunch with the guys, just drink water. I wanted to be with them, you know. And so here it is, 2 weeks into the fast, and I've lost quite a bit of weight. And the guys say, well, my God, you're losing weight here. What's going on? Well, I'm on my water fast. Well, is that fast? Does your doctor approve it? I say, my doctor recommended it. Oh, well, good, good. But I didn't tell him, I am my doctor. Can I be my doctor? Yes. Are you your doctor? Yes. Sure. You're your own doctor. You advise you what to do. You say, I'm going to take those pills or not take those pills, even though the MD tells you what to do and you don't do it. But you do what you think you should do because you're the doctor. And that's okay. Does that make sense? Does that help you a little bit there? You know I love you very much.
I love you.
You know it. Okay, yeah.
Coco, what is the best way to transfer healing techniques? The best method. The best method.
The best what?
Method.
Method.
The best?
Method to transfer.
Method. Oh, yeah. The best method.
Yeah, to transfer healing techniques. Either by thoughts or by placing hand on the patients.
You're saying the best method is with your thought. Now, what did you say?
What I'm saying.
The best method for finding things, huh?
Yeah, the best method to transfer healing to a patient. Is it by calling the person's name or by placing hand on the person?
Okay. Say what he said, please.
Sorry. How do you transfer healing to someone else? Is it by thought or by laying of hand?
You said that?
Yes.
Wow, okay. You don't. You don't. Now, there are people who do, and the transference of healings that they do are not permanent. Like these healers who people come up on the stage and are healed. You're healed in the name of Jesus. They go home and then they buy themselves another set of crutches. Healing cannot be transferred by thought or by hands or by anything. What we do with our thought and our hand is to encourage the person to be their original purity and integrity. Now, I don't want to heal anybody. I don't want to have anything to do with healing, even though that's the name of the university. All I want to do is to see everyone experiencing their original purity and integrity. Is that a good idea?
Yes.
Okay, now, if they're experiencing their original purity and integrity, are they whole?
Yes.
Yeah, nice, huh? Okay, but that's why, that's all that we do. There is nothing to heal, because the person who's experiencing illness is experiencing wholeness at the same time. But he chooses to put his attention on the illness instead of on the wholeness, because he's got both. We all do. In all of us is health, wholeness and illness and everything. Every illness known to humanity, or not known even, dwells in our bodies right now. We have everything. It's amazing. But the thing is, we do not heal by laying out of hands. We do not send healing by mental thought. Some people play the game, but it's not what Jesus taught, not what I believe, and not what I teach. But again, I don't rule the world for anybody except me. And if people want to have opinions or attitudes about how to do things, great. No. I told the girl, you don't need a new ball in your hip and in your leg. You don't need it. Yes, I want it. It's okay. Go have it done. Whatever you want. I don't care. And then once it was done, I said, did you have a perfect healing? Oh, yes. They put it in. It was perfect. Put it in. It was perfect healing. I'm just fantastic. And then she's walking around leaning because she's thinking about it. She's thinking about what she replaced. And she's thinking it maybe made her shorter. And it didn't. It's exactly the same. But these are all in our mind. And that's unfortunate. It's beautiful. All of you are beautiful. You're wonderful. Okay, thank you very much. I love you.